From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of April, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global analytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Nutrien Ag Solutions' Eric Snodgrass will be here to discuss the weather forecast. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and listen to us on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, corn futures finished the day a bit higher. May contract up 2.5 at 3.22 1/4. July 3.29 1/4, 3 higher. In December, 3.43 1/2, up 2.5. May soybeans down 4 1/4 at 8.32 1/2. The July 8.42 1/4, 3.5 lower. And November beans down 3.5 at 8.51. Bean oil a penny lower. The bean meal down 3.60. Wheat futures were up in the July 3 1/4 cents at 5.33 3/4. Live cattle futures for the day down 85 cents. Feeders up $1.27 1/2, and lean hogs were 60 cents higher. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlo, globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hi, Todd. Great to be with you.
It is good to be with you, too, as we get into the planting season. Are you cold there?
Yes, we had a dusting of snow, but nothing like northern Illinois and the Missouri-Iowa border, and even into Nebraska. Some of the clients there had about 5 inches, and they figured probably the first 2 inches melted, so they probably had about 7. And talked to Steve Erdman this morning, and he was up to 4 inches. I'm guessing it's probably double that at this point outside of Chicago. So we got away lucky when it came to the actual liquid precip. But the cold weather really set in, and we've had a couple hard freezes out here. And I think that may be starting to funnel into the hard red wheat finally. It's been a long time coming since Monday's crop conditions report really took that freeze and weather forecast for this week really off page. And we traded pretty much crop conditions and the Russian tender that we missed out on.
So we have heard a couple of times this week about those cold temperatures and the potential damage to the hard red winter wheat crop, particularly in Kansas. You're a bit closer. Have you got any information that would be useful on that front?
There hasn't been a lot of discussion in our area at this point, Todd, but I can tell you that the likelihood versus the past couple 3 years is probably higher. We were probably a little bit shorter in wheat, so it was probably closer to the ground. We were probably a little bit on the dry side, which tends to not give us as much of an insulating blanket. And just to give you an idea of what's happening here in terms of the flowers and the apple trees and things like that, is they didn't shake this freeze off hardly at all. There's quite a bit of burn on pretty much all the vegetation that was springing out before these freezes happened. And I can tell you that, you know, getting down to 25 to 27 degrees was for all night long. It wasn't just a couple hours. So I am inclined to think that the crop conditions report will start to reflect not just one freeze, but two freezes when we come back on Monday. And I think that's probably why the hard red wheat is up almost 8 cents heading into Friday's close here, and thinking that we're going to see some short covering because we missed one freeze getting into the crop conditions report, and there's been a second one since then.
Yeah, so wheat has been a stalwart. I won't call it quite a leader because everything's been moving the opposite direction, but wheat's been holding fairly strong. Some of that because wheat is a direct consumption grain by humans, and countries have been thinking about how they need to deal with the pandemic and food supplies. However, fundamentally, wheat has just really been holding on very strong over the last month. Can it help hold the rest of the marketplace higher?
I think it can, especially if the market realizes through actual data and news like we received on Friday morning that it's not just the United States that has COVID and may not be able to get the export numbers out that they need in terms of agriculture commodities. I think one of the things that allowed wheat to join up with the corn and beans and play more of the demand negativity side of the equation this week was the fact that we got into the Russian tender. Our hard red wheat was the lowest price, but because of that issue of the transportation and freight, Russia came in and got 60,000 tons of the 240,000 ton tender. And that was a surprise to the trade because Russia was supposedly under an export quota, Well, right after that happened, Romania said they're lifting their export quota, which these Baltic countries have tended to move in sync with one another. Well, come Friday morning, we find out Russia may be out of exportable wheat and have hit their quota by mid-May, if not earlier. So I think the market's starting to realize, look, the excess supplies, especially at these price levels and given the COVID, they're not there like they normally are. And so if we get a couple more news stories like that, or say we get a news story that says U.S. corn is heading into Brazil because of a short second crop Safrina Brazil corn production number, those are the kind of things I think get the wheels turning, that demand is not going straight down. But when that processor kill rate, euthanization of baby pigs and bird flocks up in the Northeast hit this market this week, it was real easy to assume that if the crude oil and the dollar didn't play a favorable role, we were probably going to carve out some new lows.
Yeah, so ethanol managed to push, and along with the processing plants, managed to push corn down into new lows. It's going to finish the day higher. What kind of outlook do you have?
Well, I think the thing that producers and ranchers really need to look at this week was the stark similarity between crude oil and hogs. Both of them are at 18-year lows. That's not a coincidence in my mind, and that's because they continue to be latched up together with the COVID. They haven't been able to come and separate themselves from the food versus the fuel. We did see that in ethanol. In fact, ethanol is hitting a three-week high as we close out this week, and we've taken the margins for the ethanol in the central corn belt from negative 22 to under a dime negative at this stage of the game. So we've really made some headway in the unleaded and the ethanol markets, but these processor issues really played out big in the hogs and in the crude. And I think that's where, if I would look to next week, the fact that gold is nearing a 12-year high, the dollar is trying to go back down again. If we can get the crude oil market to come back around and find a solid low, then I think maybe that food versus fuel sentiment will get off the back of the demand bull, and maybe we'll see a little bit more out of the crop conditions and ratings and crop progress. And then all of a sudden we have a little bit more of a momentum for a short covering mindset. One of the best things that happened this week for me was we've had 3 days in a row by my count of lower volume trade on weaker markets. And so that tends to make me think that the shorts, the funds that are pressing this market, are literally running out of the other side of the market to trade with.
Bill Westman will be our guest panelist on Commodity Week. You can hear that today on this station, on many of these radio stations over the weekend, up on our website at willag.org right now. He's with the North American Meat Institute. They lobby on behalf of processors. It was a very interesting conversation that draws me into the livestock side of this marketplace, and they didn't have such a bad day today.
No, they didn't. And I think this is where what I saw most of all was that the trade had been rightfully buying cattle and selling hogs. We saw that spread unwind. It makes sense fundamentally, because we're not going to have to cull very many cattle here because they can be fed out a little bit longer. And I think the news that the stock market jumped on with the president's three-stage process of rolling back getting the economy back going, and then some of these clinical trial issues coming around, I think these all played a supportive role heading into the end of the week. It's funny, I hope that I'm going to listen to that interview with interest, because I've been talking to the National Pork Council. I've been talking to Steve Meyer, a colleague at Kearns and Associates, and I'm live chatting with USDA about the cold storage stocks. And the question I have is, do those cold storage stocks, if they get released to a food bank, or if they get released into the open market, do they have to have further processing at facilities that are already struggling with COVID-related workforce problems? In other words, are those cold storage stocks, yes, they're broken down by cuts, but are they packaged in an available consumer-ready vac pack and things like that? Or are today's grocery stores capable, like a Kroger, could they come on and take that on and take those cold storage stocks and process those further? Or have we changed the food supply chain to where only certain companies do that nowadays? And that's kind of the stuff I'm working on for my special report, but it's going to be very important to find that answer out, to depend on whether those cold storage supplies are going to be available to take off the pressure of a potential shortage in parts of the country here for red meat.
Hey, we'll look forward to talking with you next week about that, and people can find out more about it, I suppose, if they use your website and sign up there, so they can go to globalanalytics.biz. Thanks so much. I appreciate it, Mike.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with globalanalytics.biz. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Thanks, Eric, for being with us. I'd like to get right into this. We had snow, and it's been cold. Well, snow in parts of the state anyway. And I'm wondering what impact there might have been on soil temperatures.
Yeah, so that cold snap that did come through this past week, you know, was such a change from a week ago when things were relatively dry and warm and windy, and we dried out some of our soils around here, and those soil temperatures really came up last week. In fact, at the end of last week, we had great soil temperatures across the state of Illinois. Well, since this cold snap has come through and some of the snow, not just like we saw today in parts of north central Illinois, but if you go up into Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, South Dakota, they had even more snow from a week ago. And so those soil temperatures in some parts of those states are now back down below freezing at the 4-inch depth. Well, that snow that came through here today in the northern part of the state and the rain we got down here, ultimately this was going to melt so fast, it was the equivalent of getting about a third to a half inch of rainfall. And thankfully, that wasn't the full-on soaking events that can really just shut us down for quite some time. But I have good news. And the good news starts tomorrow, and that is that the deeper wave that's been sitting over the Hudson Bay area is finally starting to meander over toward the North Atlantic. And the good news about that is our temperatures will be on full-on recovery mode beginning tomorrow. In fact, I think we might see a high tomorrow, mid, maybe upper 50s, and my kids are just desperate to go outside and enjoy that, and I think a lot of farmers will be happy to see the warmth return.
Hey, staying with the cold temps for just a second, do you think there was any impact on the hard red winter wheat crop in Kansas?
Well, we're all in a wait-and-see mode. I produced a couple of maps this week that looked at how long we kind of kept some of that wheat that was way ahead in parts of Kansas. I heard a report of up to 4 inches. The head was 4 inches above the ground. Well, so they got hit with about anywhere between 3 and 9 hours of temperatures below 25 Fahrenheit earlier this week. And I'm talking about an area from like Salina to Hutchinson to Wichita, which is a key area. Further west you go, I mean, they had 12 to 24 hours below 25 degrees. And so with the wheat crop so far ahead, given how warm it was, this could be a big shock that we need to pay close attention to, because the temperatures there not only were cold, but they had snow. In fact, they even had snow on the wheat as far south as Amarillo, Texas, 1.5 inches of snow, wet snow covering the wheat. And I think there was some damage just due to laying that wheat down under the weight of the snow.
Okay, so for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, we've been warmer than normal, colder than normal. We're about to go back, I think, to normal.
Yeah.
for a couple of days. So what happens after that?
Well, as we look out farther into the month of May, we can talk temperatures and precipitation here. As we get to the end of April, the good news about the flow pattern for the central and western corn belt is that, yes, the temperatures do recover. In other words, we don't see any major cold snaps coming like that have the duration of the one we just went through. Plus, we are now, you know, past our climatological last date for a frost here in central Illinois. And I don't see any reason beyond now to say, hey, some really cold air is coming in, it's going to frost us again or get those temperatures down below freezing. As we look out farther, the jet stream is more in a favorable configuration over the next not only 15 days, but maybe out 30 days, such that the south from Texas all the way over to the Carolinas and then up the East Coast and then coming back through parts of the Mid-South and the Ohio Valley, that region looks very wet. But to get that region wet, it often happens such that the western and northern corn belts get a chance to dry out. And so I think we're going to see a lot of progress made over the next month or so with more normal temperatures and less precipitation in parts of the central and then western corn belt. East of here, though, I'm concerned about too much precipitation.
So I'd like to ask about some global issues as well. I know it's been dry in Europe. I have no idea what's been going on in China, but they're in the middle of their growing, beginning of their growing season as well. And then we probably ought to check in on South America.
Sure. Sure. So one of the new instruments that's come on board here, and we're getting better and better data from it every year, is a satellite called GRACE. And the G in the acronym GRACE stands for gravity. And it's a pretty cool instrument, and it allows us to measure soil moisture and as it moves and changes. So when we look around the world, there are a few places that we're quite concerned about. So for example, from basically eastern France all the way through the Russian wheat belt, and that includes Ukraine, they've been very, very dry as of late. In fact, almost on the lowest end of the scale as measured by GRACE. Now, it's been warm there and very dry, and they're actually going to go into this early next week with a big chance for a frost covering a lot of Germany, a lot of Poland, and a lot of Ukraine. So we need to be on the lookout to see if that does any damage. In other words, the cold we just had is now being reflected over there with a cold snap as well. To China, same instruments measuring below average soil moisture throughout much of China's main growing areas. I'm talking about north, west, and south of Beijing, that region. So that's an early season worry. You know, we like dry conditions to plant, but we got to have the moisture to get the crop going the way we want it to go. So you need to watch that carefully. And then, as you said, South America is probably the one area that I think might have the most potential on the movement of our markets. Most major, you know, analysts suggest that the crop is shrinking in size, both for soybeans and for corn. And the biggest problems are happening in the southern part of Brazil. And as I look out over the next 10 days, Rio Grande do Sul, southern Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, they continue to show up dry, which is just eating away at the yield potential in South America due to the southern Brazil growing regions having problems. But where a lot of that safrina crop is up in Mato Grosso, it is not showing up in the forecast to be as dry as it is down south, which means you'll probably hear less of a story coming out of Mato Grosso than anywhere else. But you're right, globally, there are some pressures right now due to weather on ag.
Hey, thank you so much. We appreciate it, Eric.
Yeah. Yep, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.